I'm Marty Moscowain. Welcome to Radio Times. We are halfway through our one-on-one interviews with the Democratic candidates running for mayor of Philadelphia. The primary is May 19th. Our guest today is Nelson Diaz. He grew up in Harlem. His mother was a seamstress. His stepfather was a doorman. He moved to Philadelphia to attend Temple University Law School and later served on Common Pleas Court and was administrative judge here in the city. He worked for Vice President Walter Mondale and was counsel to HUD during the Clinton administration, and he was city solicitor for Philadelphia Mayor John Street from 2001 to 2004. Nelson Diaz is a partner at the Dilworth Paxson Law Firm here in Philadelphia, and as I say, joins us on Radio Times. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Martin.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You told my colleague Dave Davies that you decided to get into this race while you were actually watching a football game. And the reason was that you wanted – the reason you wanted to be mayor was because of the Philadelphia public schools.
Correct.
Before then, you hadn't thought about running for mayor of Philadelphia?
No, I never did. I had been involved in the corporate and economic development activities throughout my life here in the city, and it helped all political offices, as you can tell from my background. I felt that I would be a great second person to be able to make things happen and someone else get the credit. And so I tried to be as modest as I could throughout my life with regard to that. And then now as a very emotional Latino, I got very emotional about what was happening to our kids as I was the end of a football game, and felt that if we were going to do something, I couldn't stop to continue to complain. I had to get into this debate and have us realize that this is a crisis situation in which we have made an institution separate and unequal.
This is the Philadelphia public schools or the school system?
The Philadelphia public schools, where you have 85% of the population is minority, and they're not getting a proper education. 40% happens to be Latino, and throughout the country, one in four students in the school system are Latinos. And so there is a generation issue that I perceive that if we don't prepare these students for the 21st century, mm-hmm. we're going to have a workforce that's totally unprepared.
What do you, though, propose doing that the current mayor, Michael Nutter, hasn't done? Your former boss, Mayor John Street, hasn't done? Mayor Rendell wasn't able to do?
When John Street decided to turn the SRC over to the educational process, his commitment was to receive additional funds from the state.
This is the state takeover of the Philadelphia public school system.
And that was John Street who made the agreement. It was supposed to be sort of a friendly takeover. And there was a go-between, and Schweiker was then the governor. When Rendell became governor, he continued to support the financial support and, in fact, increased the support. In the meantime, Corbett becomes governor, and we start breaking up the school system. The support is lessened, and then everybody begins to think that the solution are charter schools. So we develop a number of charters. We have more charters in Philadelphia than any place in the state. And at the same time, we are bankrupting the rest of the public school system. They can't afford. They have an $80 million or above deficit, and the deficit continues to roll on, and none of our children have the equipment or the educational programs that we can compare to either to Lower Merion or to Delaware.
Well, let me pick up on several of those issues that you just raised. Do you then oppose charter schools in Philadelphia?
No. I think that the governor – I have to say I love community charters, which is like community schools. The problem is that the governor said we should have a moratorium on charters until we fix the financial situation. What has happened is the SRC, School Reform Commission, who has been in power for 13 years and has absolutely done no reform, by the way, immediately gave five new charters. I think if you're going to work with the governor and you need financial mm-hmm. support, why don't you listen to the governor's proposals, which is let's go to moratorium, let's find out how we can fund it, and then we can decide whether or not we need additional charter schools. What I am for is public education, because public education at the end is something that has been a true opportunity to lift every generation before us since the founding fathers of our nation. And right now, we do not have a possibility of someone in a public education system generally to get education, with some exceptions.
There is, though, a long waiting list of parents, of children. I mean, parents that want to get their children into charter schools. So if you look at people living in this city, while they might not be happy with the whole funding situation, they do like to have the choice, at least, of charters, public other schools like that.
Well, I believe that it's more than just charter schools. It's quality schools. You'll have the same kind of requirement and an attitude and desire to go to Central High School or to go to the school across the street from CCP, from the community college. Those schools are magnet schools, are schools that attract, they attract many, many children throughout the city. And they're quality schools. They're obviously great demand for them. Similarly, because the charters provide a good education to many, many students, and there's some good charters, but there are also some bad charters. The good charters, you should continue to maintain. The bad charters should be eliminated. But that is not the answer for the bulk of the public school children. The answer to the public school children is tailor education based on the needs of the kids. A lot of kids come from issues of home poverty, issues of illnesses because they've never seen a doctor, which was my case when I was growing up. I had asthma, the pollen and the mold and the rats and the...
This
was in a tenement in Harlem. And until I got into public housing, you know, my body didn't heal itself. Some of the kids have addictive parents, and you have to work that. Some people have abusive parents, and you have to work with that. So you have to work with the situation as it exists. Now, why do I know this? Because there is a charter school that does all of this in Camden, New Jersey, known as LEAP.
In fact, aren't you
I'm its attorney.
You're the attorney for LEAP.
And LEAP graduates 100% of its kids. They begin at an age of 3 years old with pre-K, go straight through high school, and provide after-school activities, mentoring, and support. All the kids have to eat breakfast before they start. They have lunch for them, and they try to tailor a program educational to fit their needs, and they have a relationship with the household.
So is that, I mean, if you could, as mayor, take that model from Camden that you say works so well and translate it, is that your vision? Is that your goal for Philadelphia?
That's exactly my vision, and she is one of the people who have inspired me to run for office, because this is a woman who was a migrant laborer. Dr. Gloria Bonilla. She was a migrant worker, the only person in her family to get an education. She got a PhD, and she has this relationship with Rutgers University, which gives her incredible support in what she's doing in terms of educating those kids.
Well, getting back to Philadelphia, it sounds like you want to abolish the School Reform Commission, which has been running the district since, and that would include just the schools in the city, since the state takeover. But that is not the decision that a mayor makes. That's something that comes out of Harrisburg.
Well, I disagree, and most of the other candidates are finally realizing that I'm correct, and they're using it in their arguments. I have the power to appoint 2 SRC members.
The mayor
the
does,
governor
yeah.
has the power of appointing 3 SRC members. All it takes is 3 SRC members to decide that they want to abolish the SRC, or an act of the legislature. So it can be abolished. And most of the candidates finally have agreed to that. And the governor wants to abolish the SRC and give us local control. Local control will give us an opportunity to have the mayor responsible and accountable. Today, every mayor gives an excuse that they have to go to Harrisburg, that Harrisburg is the responsible party, when the mayor should have that as the one obligation, because in my opinion, based on the history, it's a civil right which is being violated, and we are committing criminal acts on these children because we either pay now or pay later. $30,000 we pay for people in prison. We might as well spend the $30,000 now. The bulk of the people in prison do not have a high school education.
Is that the argument that you would make in Harrisburg then for funding the schools and getting rid of the school reform commission?
Well, I believe we can solve our own destiny in funding the school also. I've asked for a reform in the tax structure, which would help not only funding the schools, but it also would help in developing the economy of our city. And that requires that we somehow work on getting a progressive tax, reforming the wage tax, which is onerous on the working class, the poor, and small businesses. That would also help us take on what the Levy-Sweeney plan is, which is, and they agree, the working class community agrees, the business community agrees, that we tax more so the commercial real estate. And that, in that way, we will have an equitable taxing process, which is similar to what happens in most cities. If you look at New York City, Washington, D.C., Chicago, it's between 42 and 52% is real estate taxes, a bulk of it making it the commercial real estate tax. In Philadelphia, the city budget is only 16% of the real estate taxes, and every resident pays equally as much as the commercial real estate tax, which is pretty onerous, again, on the working class, middle class, and the elderly who want to stay in a community.
Does that give the kind of money that Superintendent Height, that the district says that they need by July?
Correct.
For the next
school year? Correct. If we go after the tax dodgers, I believe we can get $75 million after that. And I've done it before. I, as city solicitor, I went after the tax dodgers and had over $100 million of collections. If we essentially open the bars in Center City for the millennial community and give them extra hours. Well, you know, it's not drinking. A lot of it is more of having a place to enjoy, discussion, relate, because they tend to be a later crowd than most of us older people who sort of, you know, go to bed early. And since a lot of them tend to be workaholics and then they want to enjoy themselves for a few hours and then get back, they don't need as much sleep as you and I do.
Speak for yourself. No, I'm kidding.
And they will spend their money in these locations, both eating and drinking and even entertainment. We would get another $10 million out of that. And I would go on in terms of fixing the pension fund. As you know, everyone in this city has not talked about the pension liability that we have as a city. I was able to fix the pension fund at a Fortune 500 company known as Exelon. They were 65% behind, and I was able to get them 85% funded in 2 years.
Well, we're going to pick up on that after this very short break. That is Nelson Diaz, one of the six candidates running in the Democratic primary for mayor of Philadelphia. And again, the primary date is May 19th. To join our conversation, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain talking with Nelson Diaz. As I said earlier in the show, he is running for mayor of Philadelphia, one of the Democratic candidates running in the May 19th primary. Already on the show, we've had Lynn Abraham, Doug Oliver, Anthony Hardy Williams, and we will continue our conversation on Wednesday with Milton Street and on Thursday with Jim Kinney. It's your chance to put your questions and comments to the candidates. And again, the lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. We were talking about pensions, and that's a very important issue facing this city in terms of the obligation to the pensions. How would you solve that? How would you fix that?
Well, what we did in the Exelon, and that was my force in terms of being a director on the board, and I had them change the entire management structure of the pension fund. We hired the best expert we could find, a CIO who had been at Chrysler. We brought him in from Chrysler. We reorganized the management structure. We then also reorganized the governing structure. We put people from the board of directors who were financial people in the fight between the management and the board, they kept trying to get us off and not being responsible because we have liability and stuff. I said, we have liability just because we are corporate board members. So why shouldn't we manage a $30 billion pension fund? So we got it together. And I tell you, within 2 years, we went from a 65 to an 85% funded pension fund. Not only it helped pay for the entire staff, but it also helped us relieve from the obligation that you have to have 100% eventually of the pension fund so that you can pay the pensioners and the legacy costs. Likewise, in Philadelphia, there is an obligation on the part of the finance director and the mayor to make sure they put together a body that is able to manage and run the pension fund. I was involved in a case in which one major law firm was in conflict in pensions. You know how we lost millions of dollars because of that conflict, and insurance didn't cover all of the cost of losses of that fund. It is important to be able to have experts who know it and monitor it on a regular basis, and we monitor it on a quarterly basis.
But can you, using that as an example, can you run and manage a pension fund in the public sector that you can in the private sector?
Yes, you can, because you'll have some obligations with regard to people that you have to put on, but if you essentially have a governing structure that brings in other experts into the governing structure, which will give you educational process on what's happening in the market and where should go and what's your mix of investments, where you go 40, 50, 60, 40, and whether you go into the fixed incomes or the equities, and all of those issues are important as the market moves forward. And what has happened, it generally is, we continually take a similar approach to it. We're going to be conservative, we're going to go this way, and you stay that way and you keep losing.
Let me go back to education, because I saw a quote where you said on your first day in office that you would meet with the governor, city council president, and head of the teachers union. You would sit down and figure out how we're going to educate our children. Do you really think it's that simple?
Yes. It's that simple because there's literature in this area. The literature says that if you do a wraparound system, and this is a term of art in the educational system, if you do a wraparound system, you then sit down and figure out how much that wraparound system is going to cost in terms of the social, economic, medical, and all kinds of needs of the student. And then you have a teaching group. Then you have an entrepreneurial principle. And you hold people accountable with regard to that process. It works.
But you've got union contracts, which hasn't even been signed. You've got issues of seniority. You've got, fights over benefits.
Well, you know, the union
benefits.
The union has gotten weaker and weaker and weaker. And if they do not invest in public schools, you're going to have nothing but charter schools in the entire city. And that's the intent, to be able to break up the entire union by having all these charters. And in addition to
that, think that's the intent coming from?
No question about
from
it.
From where? From
coming from the charter groups, the investment population, and those hedge fund funders who are funding some of our candidates. It's important to realize that they don't have necessarily interest in the education. They have an interest in the final and bottom line of their investments. The question then is it works because the schools are smaller, there's more investment, there's more money, you get public funds, you got parent involvement. You know what the charter schools did? They killed the Catholic school system. We don't have a Catholic school system because now you have an alternative to go to a cheap alternative, which is a charter school, which is run by the private sector.
I mean, it sounds like you want to get rid of the charter schools.
No, I don't want to get rid of the charter schools. What I want to do is, I'd like to have community charters. That's really important. They work well. Examples of that is Esperanza, for example. Mm-hmm. They have a very good charter, which is run out of the community. The Alney High School, which was the worst high school in the city, was taken over by Aspira, and today is the number one science and math school in the city. So they do good work. The charter schools work. The problem is, let's assume a children does not do well in that charter, or he's thrown out of the charter school, where does he or she go? She goes back into the public school system. So if we don't have the quality opportunities in the charter school system, now, you don't have gym anymore in many of the public school systems, so you'll never know if you have another Michael Jordan in the school. You don't have any art in the public school system, so you'll never know if you have another Picasso coming out of there. And you don't have many of the music and other programs that I think make people a whole individual, and that's lacking in our system. While in these charter schools, because they are small enough and they're getting all kinds of other resources, they'll take these kids directly to the Philadelphia Museum of Art, or they'll take them to the art centers or to the plays, and they get art individually. And that's not happening in the entire public school system.
Let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Nelson Diaz, and he is running for mayor of Philadelphia. And on Radio Times, we have been hosting the mayoral candidates running in the Democratic primary May 19th. I should add, there is a Republican. She is running unopposed, which is why we have invited the six Democrats to join us. And our guest, Nelson Diaz, has a long history here in Philadelphia. In fact, he's a Temple University Law School graduate, served on the Court of Common Pleas, also was an administrative judge. He was city solicitor for Philadelphia Mayor John Street back from 2001 and 2004, and currently is a partner at the law firm of Dilworth Paxson here in Philadelphia. And any questions or comments, you can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Philadelphia, the fifth largest city, so whoever is the mayor of the city matters not just to Philadelphia, but to the region and, frankly, to the country, if I can put it that way. Let me ask you a little bit about police and police-community relations. And I ask you this, of course, knowing about the crisis in Baltimore and the death of the man that was in police custody, and now we're seeing, you know, near riots on the streets of Baltimore. If you were mayor and that were happening here in Philadelphia, what would you do?
Well, you have to look at the background of the individuals that you are electing. And my whole life, I've been a civil rights advocate and been involved in the civil rights movement in terms of peaceful demonstrations. I've protected many of the advocates who, to some extent, could have blown situations out of proportion. I was heavily involved in working with the Black Panthers and the Young Lords Party back during the Rizzo period. And I protected them, and I worked together with the Philadelphia Bar Association, had a relationship with the mayor at the time, Frank Rizzo, and the police commissioner, and would talk to them about, hey, let me be the protector so that there is no injury both to you or to the individuals involved in these peaceful demonstrations, and also provided access to the media so they can express their anger. What has happened in these situations is there is such a mistrust of the police. We've had the incident in Ferguson. We've had this incident in Baltimore. We've had so many incidents. And in Philadelphia, we have a lot of police shootings throughout the year that injure people also, and some of them die. The importance of having a relationship with the police, community policing, is the most important concept that we have to employ in order to stop the mistrust that exists. There is language that is used, like the one that Kenny used, about cutting people's hands off.
Which he regretted. I mean,
he didn't regret. He said he was embarrassed.
Right. This is something he said 20 years ago about punishing someone.
He said he was embarrassed. He does not apologize for it. And he also said that he would not have any oversight over police in this area of abuse. So that both of those things, you know, you can't say, my whole life, 45 years, you can document everything that I've done, mm-hmm. which is to protect citizens. I marched in the RA, which is the Equal Rights Amendment in 78. I was involved in the Equal Pay Amendment. So you got to look at a person's total life commitment, and not that you conveniently become what the public wants you to be with money. And that's what they do.
Well, and I do want to get to that. But are you saying, and we'll using Baltimore as an example, but obviously we're here in Philadelphia. But in Philadelphia, are police, are they the problem when it comes to police-community relations?
If you lived in a community in which you are on a regular basis stopped and frisked by the police, If you live in a community where the only thing you see a police person do is arrest somebody, and you know how difficult it is when you are incarcerating, taking someone, and the struggles that go on, if you are a person that's all you see about the police, you're going to immediately get a negative view of the police. You have to have police officers that are part of that community and not just there to arrest, for them to be able to enjoy relationships with their kids so that they know who the troublemakers are that are coming in and coming out. In Europe, in Japan, in many other communities throughout the country, throughout the world, you don't have these many shootings. And so what you have to do is make sure that the police play with the kids. You have PAL centers around. You have some community activities where the police is a part of it. You have police walking the beat and seeing the individuals and the people, knowing the district. That relationship improves the trust between the police and the individuals. And when you're going to have incidents, you're going to call your friendly cop who happens to be on that beat. And that will protect, in my opinion, the situation that we see today.
Well, and you mentioned guns. And while I think it's clear that the police and community have much better relationship than they have now, but looking at, you know, who gets killed in this city, it's really young minority men shooting each other.
That's great.
What do you do?
There is a lot of crime on crime, which happens to be related to guns and the availability of guns. And the NRA has been impossible to beat in the state of Pennsylvania because it is a state law and you can usurp the state law. That has been a difficult. But let me tell you, in New York City, where you still have the requirements, they have less murders in New York City, number-wise, with 9 million people than we have with 1.2 million over 500. So you have to understand that they're doing something right in terms of controlling police issues, and it doesn't necessarily have to be all related to being profiling and stopping and frisking. You have to be able to have a better relationship in that possibility of the police and the individual. The report that came out from Washington talks about the mistrust that exists. You got to develop a trust. Whenever something happens, the first person you call is a cop. But you have to understand, who is that cop? It would have been a lazy to call, hey, it's John Santos that I'm calling, and John Santos knows me, and John, look, you know, there's a guy walking who's strange around the area. Maybe if you have some time, you know, you should check that out. Or the child will call up and say, hey, I saw somebody running in that area. Maybe you think something is happening. When you have that kind of relationship, I think it improves the trust relationship.
Sounds like you want to stop and frisk. I mean, or end stop and frisk.
Oh, I know. Stop and frisk is allowable if you have suspicion. And that's the constitutional requirement, suspicion. But it's not allowed if you're just doing it based on profiling. Mm. And what happens is, of the incidents, of the over 200,000 stop and frisk, you have less than 47% of those people get arrested, and less than 10% of them have a conviction. So there is a misuse of the stop and frisk process. It's allowable, remember, the Constitution says, if there is suspicion.
Reading a little bit about you and from conversations, interviews that you've had, I know you grew up in Harlem. You grew up in poverty.
Yes.
This is a city where most of the children attending schools are low-income kids, the public schools for sure. About 25% of the population is poor, about half of that desperately poor. How do we solve that problem?
It is a very, very revealing question, because the bulk of the poverty happens to be the poor whites in the Kensington area, the African-Americans and the Latinos. It's both, you know, you can concentrate it in a part of our community. And what we have to do is, just like they do the CompStat method on police officers, we have to go there. There are 40,000 vacant units in the city. 7,000 can be reauthorized immediately into public housing and have the federal government pay for the rental expenses of those 7,000 units.
The Section 8?
No, these are the Philadelphia Housing Authority, through their welfare to work program, have been given liberty to do a modernizations program, and in their modernization program, doing mixed financing, which is based on my opinion, Diaz's opinion, they have lost 7,000 units of public housing benefits for rental opportunities. These 7,000 units could be reauthorized. That's what the federal government gives you in terms of authorization of how many units you can have in a city. Those, at one time, you had the one-for-one replacement. The one-for-one replacement law was abolished in 1994. So they can get rid of units, but the federal government is permitted to give you the full complement that you had. So having the full complement, 7,000 units can be reauthorized to fill up housing authority. The second thing is we can get housing developed cheaply in some of those 40,000 units so we can put people in houses instead of having them homeless on the street. The best thing of getting homelessness is getting a house. And then you figure out how you essentially begin to give financial support to those communities. We have now, fortunately, the Obamacare Act that helps on the medical side. We've got to make sure that we have a system in which we help on the housing side. Now, the state and the city have not participated, have not given any money to the Philadelphia Housing Authority in terms of housing, even though they do a good management job. And the problem is that the city keeps saying, hey, it's a federal responsibility or it's the Harrisburg responsibility. None of these people who are running for us are innovative enough to say, let's figure out how we can get the financial support that we need income-wise so that we can get these housing back in force, which would help the tax base of the city.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Again, that's Nelson Diaz, one of the six Democrats running for mayor of Philadelphia. This reminder, the primary is on May 19th. Also, these interviews, these series of interviews, part of WHYY's extensive election coverage. You can check it out at the Newsworks blog, The 99. You can also call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Nelson Diaz, one of six Democrats running for mayor of Philadelphia. The primary is May 19th. The Republican candidate is running unopposed. Our guest, Nelson Diaz, has served in a number of capacities here in Philadelphia on the Court of Common Pleas. He was an administrative judge as well, worked for some time for Vice President Walter Mondale, was counsel to HUD, and that was during the Clinton administration, and was city solicitor for Philadelphia Mayor John Street back from 2001 to 2004. And currently he's a partner at the Philadelphia law firm of Dilworth Paxson. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. In fact, we have a tweet from Eddie. He said, it's evident you know what you're talking about. How do you close the deal and separate from the other candidates? Go ahead, Nelson Diaz.
That's a great question, Eddie. I believe that if we as a public realize that this dark money is not going to decide our elections, we will be able to send a message to all of those private investors and people who essentially want to control the mayor, that there is no controlling them.
And this is just for our listeners, this is the outside money that's being spent in support of certain candidates. Not you, though, right?
That's right. No, I for some reason, dark money doesn't come my way because I'm very honest and have a great ethic.
Are you saying they're dishonest?
I believe that the issue of credibility in terms of ethics is an issue because you can't tell me they're not coordinating somehow when one of the candidates is the neighbor to the labor guy and the other
John
one,
Daugherty
John
and
Daugherty and Kenny,
Jim Kenny,
they're neighbors. They live next door to each other. And the other candidate has been involved in passing legislation in the State House relating to charter schools.
And that's Anthony Hardy
Williams. And that's Anthony Hardy Williams. So, I mean, they obviously have – I mean, I wouldn't be giving $5 million to someone unless I'm going to get something back. I wouldn't be giving $2 million to someone unless I'm getting something back. And in our case, none of the other candidates in this race have been – had the either fortune or misfortune of having that kind of money thrown at them.
But are you saying this is illegal or borderline illegal?
Well, the law says that on the Cities United that any individual has a First Amendment right to go out there and produce these PACs. Anyone can do that. The question really is it coordinated with your campaign? And that's something that has to be investigated. But what I say to you is it is pretty obvious that their relationship's there, and whether or not they're coordinated or not, I can't tell you. But if they are coordinated, it's illegal.
Well, and the question was really how you're going to separate yourself from the pack. And if they've got the pack money,
well,
what are you going to do?
We have to go directly to the communities. I would ask Eddie that he needs to call as many people as possible to be involved in making sure we have a grassroots campaign.
And who's Eddie?
Who he just called?
Oh, Eddie. I'm sorry. Yes.
Right?
Yes. Didn't
Eddie
call us? Absolutely. Yes, he did.
Okay.
did a better job than I did.
Well, you know, I remember Eddie's real claim, because I believe that Eddie's correct, that someone has to separate themselves from all of these individuals, because I have the executive experience. I've reformed public housing. I reformed the public courts, and I have been able to relate to developing economic development and business districts throughout the city. And I was not an elected official, and I didn't vote for anything. I went out there and did it. And that's what we have to do. As a city, we have to come together and do things for our own communities, not wait for others to do it for us.
You were here along with the other candidates yesterday, a forum at WHYY. Have there been too many forums from your perspective? Then we'll get to some callers here.
Well, you know, the problem with the forum is it would have been easier for everybody to get in one room and for us to be involved in responding to the questions. By going to each one of these forums, they begin stealing each other's magic in terms of what they say.
Do you feel like the other candidates have stolen some of your luster,
well,
your ideas?
I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Kenny went to the Philadelphia PFT, which is the Federation of Teachers. And he said, there's no way that I can get rid of the SRC. Well, yesterday at a meeting that we had up in the Philadelphian, he said, well, you know, I can put my appointments, the governor can put appointments, and we can get rid of the SRC. That's what I've been saying. And Lynn Abraham, for example, talked about that she was going to fight with regard to the school issue with the case in the Commonwealth. And I said, look, it's a civil right. It's a legacy of discrimination that we have in this system, and the proper form for that is the federal courts. Well, she's obviously told me she's going to put an ad relating to that. So I appreciate that they have taken, and then my funding plan of the schools, which funds at $300 million this year, $600 million over the next 5 years, is the only plan that we have, and people take bits and pieces of it at times, like the reform on the business area where we take
the tax.
They're now talking about it. So I appreciate the fact that I've gone through all of this thinking and processing, and they've adopted what I hope is that if I'm not elected, that they do some of these things, and I think it would have been worthwhile. But we need to separate ourselves from the pack. I believe that if people come out to vote, because all you need is between 60 and 80,000 votes, if people come out to vote for me, I can be your mayor.
Let me see what Matt from Glenn Mills has to say. Matt, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi there. Hi. So I've been listening to the entire conversation, and
Good.
I think he sounds really great, but the problem is when he talks about schools and he talks about the police and all these different programs that he wants to do, the problem is that that all costs quite a lot of money. And I know the entire Philadelphia region is very heavily taxed, extremely taxed right now. And I would say I'm an independent, but, I mean, just I love the idea of all the programs. Problem is that where is the money going to come from? It costs quite a lot of money.
No, fair enough. Matt, let me get a response from our guest, Nelson Diaz.
Matt, you're absolutely right. The issue is always the chicken or the egg, and that's what they tried to do with me in terms of this campaign. They said, hey, if you got one of the super PACs, you know, I'm with you. I have to tell you that the chicken or the egg is that we have to reform our tax structure in order that we tax the right people, and the problem is we're taxing the wrong people at this point. I tried to share with you that 16% of the budget of the city is real estate taxes, when in most cities is 34 to 52%, which really involves a big deal of the commercial real estate tax. So we're letting the commercial real estate folks walk away. Now, this is something not only coming from me, but it's coming from the Levy-Sweeney plan, which says, hey, we should be paying a greater portion, and you have to get away from these regressive business taxes and these regressive wage taxes. And we believe that by doing that, we can essentially get, you know, that real estate taxes pay for the school system. Real estate taxes also will generate more capital if we have the millennials stay here, so we'll have more taxing opportunity. If we get rid of all of those vacant units, they'll be put on the tax roll. If we start taxing the nonprofits who are making money, we also will get some revenue out of that. You know, a big nonprofit is IBC. And we have to, if we tax them appropriately, we'd get a lot more money into our city.
Matt, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Tom from West Philadelphia has to say. Tom, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Actually, this kind of goes along with what you were just mentioning about the vacant housing across the city. But I'd like to know how you would incentivize, especially the millennial generation, to purchase homes in the city and become homeowners. So that they stay in the city for the long term.
Are you one of those millennials, Tom?
I am.
You are. And are you looking to buy a house?
I'd like to.
And put down roots, obviously.
Exactly.
All right.
And, you know, schools are definitely important, but also, you know, you have to have a route to purchase a house and, you know, make that affordable.
Sure. Thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Tom, it's a very, very good question because many young people today, because they are strapped with student loans, are having trouble with regard to making investments in real estate or property. I believe that's the next bankruptcy issue is going to be all of the students. We're paying $55,000, for example, to go to Drexel University. You imagine what you pay for all the other institutions, and people are dragged behind with these loans. The opportunity that exists today in terms of loans is the low interest rates. And a first-time home buyer can get benefits from Fannie, which is Fannie and Freddie, which is the federal secondary market, and from the FHA market. So there is first-time homeowner opportunities available, and there is counseling available in that process. I'm vice chairman of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, which is involved in trying to counsel and help people through this process of first-time home buyers. And there is a great opportunity to be able to include themselves in that. And so you can get it now with lower down payments, assuming you have a good credit score. And the credit score is what's really triggering the opportunity to get a house. Now, the other opportunity that you have is sweat equity. With what's happening in Fishtown and Northern Liberties and some of the other communities where you can get in on the bottom and begin to be a part of the elevation of that community and the improvement of that community, that gets you eventually some equity that you can utilize. And you fix the roof, you fix the things little by little until you really have a house. And you use that as a starter house, which is what my daughter did. Use that as a starter house and move to the next one.
Tom, thanks for calling into Radio Times. A tweet from Sheena says, what are your thoughts about making Philadelphia a safe haven for homeless LGBT youth? Talking about suicide rates, does he think that at the root of the distrust between cops and citizens of color is structural racism? Let me take the first part, which is making this a place or maybe more of a place for LGBT homeless youth.
You know, there's no question that there has been a real antagonism in terms of the LGBT community for a long time, not only here but throughout the country. I was involved in 1987 when the Pew Foundation put a commission together. I was part of that commission where there was the epidemic. Today, we are very fortunate that the science has improved. With one pill, you can essentially,
for AIDS,
you can essentially really survive yourself. And what I did when I was at HUD is, there is a program where you develop housing for the elderly and other housing in the market rate. We made sure that 10% of that housing was available to people with AIDS or disabilities. So we were able to house people who needed that. And because if you have a home, if you have the illness, and if you're taken care of, you really can recover or live at least a lengthier life. And so we moved that, and we gave grants throughout the country to do that. We did that in Miami. We did that here in Philadelphia. And we did it in New York and San Francisco. So it's there are opportunities. And as we know right now, they built with federal housing support, they built a whole building units in the 1300 block of Spruce Street. Yeah. So Mark Siegel was heavily involved in leading that opportunity.
Sheena, thanks for the tweet. Let me ask you a couple of other issues because I'm looking at the clock here. What should be the future of the Philadelphia Gas Works, PGW? The mayor had a plan for its sale that got quashed by city council or the head of city council.
Well, there's some people who want it to be sold. And people should realize if the PGW is sold, what happens generally is the company that takes it on, developers are called synergies. So you're gonna have at least two-thirds less employees in there because the company who buys it has a capacity to manage it with less employees. So that's one issue you have to
– Although I think the company said that they were willing to keep the same number of employees for a certain time period.
Yeah, that's a limited time period. But, you mm-hmm. know, I saw the deal. And I saw the
would you have signed on to that?
Well, what I would have done is I would have sat down with the president of city council and at least some progressive members of city council and sat down. Do we want to sell this? If we want to sell this, let's do this together because the property doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the city. It doesn't belong to the mayor. And I think the fault of the mayor was that he said, take it or leave it, proposition. Mm-hmm. There could have been some level of input or output from each part that could have made this an available sale. But I believe that right now when we have a major need of employment in this city, it is the wrong time to sell PGW.
Mm. At the same time, I'm actually looking at a piece that was in the Inquirer today, an editorial about the fact that if things go as they are, the Philadelphia Gas Works PGW will replace the aging pipelines in the 22nd century, so in almost 100 years. I mean, yep. Obviously the city cannot wait that long.
That's true for most utilities.
They're that old?
Yeah. I was on the board of PECO, and we have cast iron that was put together back during the Depression. If you remember, there were great projects that Roosevelt put together in terms of work. And they're still working. They cast iron, and they're still there, and you have to replace them eventually. And now that PGW is making a profit, that profit can be turned into fixing that, which also creates jobs, infrastructure jobs, and opportunities for the city. So that is another reason why that should be done. And PGW gets some reimbursement by the PUC for replacing that anyway. So it doesn't, the burden is not totally upon PGW, it's upon making sure that we have good services across the board.
Well, on that note, we do have to end our conversation. Nelson Diaz, thank you for joining us today
on
Radio Times.
I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And he is running for mayor of Philadelphia in the Democratic primary. And again, the primary is May 19th. And only because I've gotten some complaining emails, a reminder, it's a Pennsylvania primary. There are all sorts of elections happening outside the city, and you can exercise your right to vote on May 19th as well.
Don't forget about my environmental.
And there's much.
The best.
He says he's the best when it comes to environmental roles. For more information about Radio Times, go to WHYY.org/Radio Times. You can download a podcast. You can find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Get the newsletter. Also, listen to us on satellite radio, XM Sirius Channel 122. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.